Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
This is Jennifer Hellman, Intuitive Life Coach, and your host for air. Tonight is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in. Plus, our guest tonight has so much information, you'll really want to step back and absorb all that's in it. Phil Seiswick is an astrologer, a writer, and a comedian. He has been talking about the universe for some time and has a very informative website, philseiswick.com. And I invite you to check it out and find out more about what's going on. Tonight we're going to be talking about many parts of the sky, so with that, I want to welcome Phil to the show and say, how are you doing tonight?
Doing quite well, actually. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Now, yeah. I thought we could start from the center and work our way out.
Okay.
Does that work to you?
Yes, it
okay.
does.
So what is a galactic center, and what does it mean to us?
Well, as the Earth goes around the Sun goes around a gravitational nucleus in space that's called the galactic center. Now, this point is some 50,000 light years away from us, and we go around it once every roughly 240 million years, but nobody's quibbling about the exact amount. At the center of the galactic center is this black hole. It's a supermassive black hole. Probably in the middle of every galaxy there's a black hole. At least that's the current model of thinking. And this is slowly drawing everything in the galaxy toward the black hole. But we don't have any need for concern in the immediate future because this is going to take a few eons or two. And for those reincarnation fans, you'll probably have to reincarnate, 60,000 times. But nonetheless, this point emanates a tremendous amount of energy, and it started coming to our attention in 1976 astrologically, so it's been around a while. And what it does to the average person, as it were, is it gives them tracking on information that they normally wouldn't receive. It's kind of like conscious channeling. You don't go unconscious or in trance or have to meditate or go to Tibet or anything along that line. It just comes to you. And when it comes to you, you'll get certain physical reactions like a itching sensation on the top of the head. Sometimes the palms of the hands or bottoms of the feet heat up. Sometimes there's gurgling in the stomach, and you get this information that you don't know. I mean, you have no way of knowing this information. It's not anything that you've studied in school, that anybody told you, that you found on a blog, nothing like that. But the information is progressive, and it's advanced, and what it's trying to do is it's trying to get everyone to the next stage of consciousness and the next stage of thinking. So normally when a person detects an idea that originated in the galactic center, most of the people around them listen, they scratch their heads and go, whatever, and walk off to somebody who's talking about something more mundane and certainly more interesting.
Can I ask you a question at that point?
Sure.
Now, I've been told by several other astrologers that I'm born kind of almost in perfect alignment with a galactic center.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly does that mean?
Well, what that means is that you're one of these people that need to be, and need to be, quote unquote, the mouthpiece for what the galactic center is bringing through. So if you made a routine of sitting down several times a week for maybe 20 minutes at a time and just let the information roll, a book would unfold, some sort of course, information that you can put out to people. It's original. Nobody else has thought of it yet. Now, the thing about the information of the Galactic Center is it's free and it's available to everyone. You don't need cable. You don't need satellite dish. Maybe a little tinfoil crumpled on your head pointed in the right direction would help. I don't know. But it's out there and someone is going to get it. In Hollywood, they say that everybody is writing the same screenplay at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the collective unconscious, meaning it's out there. Whoever grabs it and brings it down is going to be the leader of the pack with that particular wave of consciousness.
Okay.
For instance, the Wright brothers flew their airplane with an alignment of the planet Uranus, which we attribute to flight, and the Sun. They were both aligned to the galactic center. There were a lot of people trying to fly at that time, and some lost their lives in doing so, but the Wright brothers managed to make it. Now, what happened with people at that time is they looked at the airplane and that newfangled thing, and they said, if God had intended for people to fly, we'd all have wings. And it took many decades before people warmed up to the idea of flight. So that's an example of, you know, there's a response curve. People can't quite wrap around it yet. So
Da Vinci had the wing thing back in his time, and people kind of said, yeah, right.
Yeah, well, yes. And they didn't, his problem was there wasn't enough stuff technically to go ahead and to support it beyond glider phase. But, you know, as mechanization came in, it became more viable for sure. But people that are galactic center contactees are the ones who come up with the new ideas that, you know, people will initially rebuff, but they must maintain persistence. The key is hold your idea close to you for 6 to 9 months, because nobody's going to get it for that interval of time anyway. Develop it, get ready to go, and then 6 to 9 months later, do the launch. If you put out the idea that you get today, people will scratch their heads, but toward the end of the year, everybody's going to be warmed up to the idea. They're all going to be talking about it. It's going to be the next wave, and pretty much everybody who hears about it will think they thought of it. And that's why, you know, if you're concerned about intellectual property or anything along that line, you know, it's like, get it documented.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what else can you tell us about it?
Well, there's a couple of things about the Galactic Center that are also really important. And these are the fact that, people are wanting this information. They're needing it. In the past few years, we have had Pluto to the galactic center. And in this time frame, you know, people were looking for something that's going to transform total consciousness and things along that line. And it's hugely important, hugely. And it's the deal with this is that people need to understand that if there is going to be this big consciousness break in 2012, such as people are forecasting and whatnot, it's important to go ahead and start changing now. It's not like, you know, people are talking about the ending of the Mayan calendar and the galactic alignment, which means that it's a technical thing, but there's an alignment of the orientation of our solar system to the galactic plane that actually took place in 1999. It does not take place in 2012. And so, you know, people are trying to make everything about 2012. You know, there's going to be an intensification of solar activity in 2011. People are saying, but it happens in 2012. No, it happens in 2011. And if we are going to change consciousness between now and or at the Mayan calendar, it's not like on Tuesday everybody's going to wake up and be enlightened. It ain't going to happen anyway. So the urgency of what we've experienced recently with the galactic center is start thinking progressively in total consciousness that we're all in this together, we're all part of this planet, and boy, until that happens, you know, it's going to be segregational, and there's going to be factions, and there's going to be fighting, and nobody's getting it, as it were. So, you know, the whole thing that people are trying to look forward, they're putting too much pressure on 2012, and they should be using the consciousness that has come out in the past 2 to 3 years and putting it into nuts and bolts applications as opposed to just talking about lofty ideas.
Right. So, do you think that people are getting a clue about becoming more aware now, or do you think they're waiting till 2012?
Well, I think that the mainstream of people are waiting for 2012. They think that something's going to happen when the Mayan calendar expires that's going to be, you know, either enlightenment or the doomsayers of this time are basically psychic terrorists. You know, people that are going around and saying, end of the world. It's like, well, what do you work for, Galactic Homeland Security? Is there scare the dookies out of everybody so that they comply to your agenda or whatever? I mean, God almighty. And what good is that?
Really?
Unless you can do something about it. Now, I don't think those people are getting it. I think the people that are riveted on 2012 are waiting for it to be done to them, whereas the people who understand things like the galactic center has been happening, there's this ongoing evolution, we have new forces to work with astrologically and in terms of our consciousness, and the people that are building and growing through that are the ones that, that have that vision. Now, I do think that with the recent elections that we've had in the United States, which does, you know, I don't mean to sound like an arrogant person from the United States, but, you know, there is a global impact that's starting to happen. I mean, people are willing to talk to countries that they've not been willing to talk to before. That's amazing progress. That's the spirit of cooperation that's making the offering. And also the consciousness is shifting back toward the people, as in this is what people need as opposed to this is what companies need and bureaucracies and whatnot. So there are seeds that have been sown. But, you know, if you read blogs on the Internet, you got to wonder if people at large are getting it or maybe they would need to be re-steered to some of the blogs that actually promote the consciousness as opposed to inspire the fear and the worry and such.
And there are a lot of people that really almost live on that fear factor, don't they?
They do. They do. They live on the fear and negativity factor. It's a little bit like, you know, I was talking with an astrologer colleague of mine last year when we were talking about Facebook and things along that line and, you know, comparing our experiences of putting information out there into more of the mainstream marketplace. And you're met with a lot of negativity, you're met with a lot of sarcasm, you're met with a lot of people just being mean-spirited and vicious.
Right.
There are astrology forums where you can go and exchange ideas, and very quickly the ideas deteriorate. I found that usually beyond about 8 posts, there's nothing more good to say unless somebody surfaces that's new. And it's just a re-spinning, and people are... There's two things happening. One, that they're trying to maintain a sense that they actually know something. And part of that is, you know, if I think that I know something, then I have a sense of direction and I know where I'm going, so therefore I'm okay. And
right.
There's also a little bit of a superiority there. And a lot of the things that are happening in terms of the Internet and whatnot are astrologically significant because it's dealing with the theme of exclusion, which is the result of one of the recent planets that we've had discovered in the solar system.
And which one was that?
Oh, that would be Eris. And
Yes,
good old Eris. She was discovered in 2003, and what happened is that you know, she came in and she's larger than Pluto. So if you're going to say that Pluto is a planet, then you have to say that Eris is a planet. Now, the astronomers, and I had the opportunity, the wonderful opportunity, and if anybody gets a chance to hear him, Mike Brown, one of the co-discoverers of Eris, he's absolutely phenomenal and just a heap of fun, and he's got great information. Now, he says if you think that Pluto is a planet, you're delusional. And so his thing is, well, we have this new grouping called dwarf planets. And so that's kind of, there's a whole astronomical political abomination that took place in terms of establishing what makes a planet. So we have this category called dwarf planets. And people say, well, they're not large, but that's a little bit like saying the plate of food looks good, but I don't care how it tastes. And what I mean by that is we're talking about the size of the planet, but we're not talking about how tightly packed it is, the density, nor are we talking about the gravity. And if you actually do a physical comparison of the dwarf planets, their relationships of gravity and density are far more significant than the other planets. Yes, they're at greater distances and so on and so forth, but they're packed tighter. Their message is hardcore. And their message is such that the gravity, the relative gravity of those things, when you decide to lock on or when they lock on to you, whichever it actually is, they're gonna draw you into this direction of consciousness. So here comes Eris, the goddess of discord. And she was named this because they wanted to name her Persephone, but the name had already been taken. And here, this little tiny thing upset all of the contemporary thinking about what our solar system was and how it worked and stuff like that. So it was the perfect goddess of discord. She upset the apple cart, as it were. Now, the vulnerability of Eris is she cannot stand to be excluded. she was excluded from the wedding of the century back in her time and wreaked a course of havoc and revenge by tossing an apple upon which she had carved the word Callisti, which means for the fairest. And she rolled it up to the feet of the three most prominent gorgeous goddesses in the land. Well, all of the goddesses thought that the apple was for them, and so they started vying for it. It ended up being this incredible controversy, as it were. And what ended up happening as a result is, because of the apple being given in favor, the result was the Trojan Wars and the discord that went with. But the effect of the apple, it was an interesting thing, because what she did is she threw vanity into the mix because she was excluded. So she made vanity the issue. So she actually attacked the Achilles heel of those who had decided to exclude her. A really fascinating sort of thing.
Right.
Now what happens with this is, you know, we have exclusivity is the issue. I mean, in the political circles, we're starting to hear about inclusivity as opposed to exclusivity, which seems to be working better. But the whole internet rage that we have, and if you look up Facebook and MySpace, they started it at the same time that Eris was discovered,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how many friends do you have? Ooh, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
I just got new friends today. So that means what? That you're more conscious than everybody else, that you're helping the world evolve, or that you're obsessed with popularity? I mean, this is the Eris theme. She's saying, you know what? Stop obsessing about things that don't matter. Release your addiction to status and success and create a life for yourself that's worth living. And until you have a life that's worth living, you ain't living. That's
right.
The message of Eris. And it's a beautiful, powerful spiritual message that, you know, people are so afraid that they're going to miss out on something or be left out. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that are actually they're worth being left out of.
Oh, most definitely. Quite a few. Now,
quite a few.
Now, each planet has a different sign to it. How does that really affect the way she affects you? Or is she just a general message and that just gives a little more specific energy of how it's affecting you?
Well, since the 1920s, she has been in the sign of Aries, the early
mm-hmm.
1920s, and she's going to be in Aries for quite a while longer yet. So basically, everybody has Eris in Aries. So the sign that is affecting us as a result of this is Aries, which is, you know what, you have to think of yourself, and you have to create priorities that are self-referential. Because without priorities that are self-referential, and in this sense, self-referential means for the good of one's spirit, you know, the core of your being, you're not going to be able to function effectively because you're always going to be vying for position so that you can preserve turf and ensure popularity and things along that line.
Right.
Now, as we look at, when we look at these new planets and we're trying to figure out what they mean, we can look at the sign where it comes closest to the sun, and
mm-hmm.
we can look at something that astrologers call the node, which is sort of like a destiny profile for the particular body. And what we find here when we're looking at Eris is that she is closest to the sun in the sign of Libra, and she has a node in Taurus. So Libra goes into relationships, and Taurus goes into material well-being. And so the two things that Eris is really pointing out is that maybe your agenda, maybe your attitude towards relationship and money are out of alignment with your spirit. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people, courtesy of Eris, are, you know, looking at their wealth, as it were,
mm-hmm.
in this economic time and going, oh, my God, I'm not who I thought I was because I'm not as rich as I used to be. I'm now, you know, 40% poorer than I used to be. Wow, what does that mean to my psyche? What does that mean to me? You know, and so these are issues that Eris is surfacing, and she's saying, again, she's going in and she's saying, you know, build a quality of life that
right.
works for you, that's spiritually sustaining and so on. So those are the signs, as it were.
Okay. Now, Pluto is also known as a planet of transformation, correct?
Yes.
Now, when Pluto hit the galactic center,
mm-hmm.
And it hit a couple times at the end of 2007, correct?
Yes.
It lined up pretty close.
Yes, and Jupiter involved in the mix, too.
Right. It was 2008 that it really hit.
Yep.
So what exactly does that mean? I mean, Pluto was demoted. So it really is quite powerful. As someone who just lived through Pluto and Sag for the last 12 years, hitting my sun directly, I went through a lot of transition through the last 12 years.
Absolutely.
Now, hitting the galactic center, I did get more information.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, what is Pluto in comparison to Eris?
Well,
I mean, is it just two different, totally different energies?
Yeah, two totally different energies entirely. Pluto represents, you know, the underworld. He was the lord of the underworld. He does have a parallel with Eris in that Pluto hoarded and was very greedy. But when Pluto liked someone, he went out of his way to reward them with wealth and whatnot. And he sort of had the attitude that you can just take what you want. But in the descent into the underworld, one goes through the transformational process, especially if you look outside the traditional Greco-Roman philosophy. So Pluto's about going down to get it. It's like, you know, unless you do the self-reflective, deep inner work, Pluto doesn't function in a chart, and a person tends to be greedy and profligate and, you know, things along that line. So he gets the ball started. Now, what the astronomers have done, which was quite brilliant, is they said that any planet that moves like Pluto, and when they say moves like Pluto, they call it a 3-to-2 ratio. What this means is, for Pluto, every time Pluto goes around our sun twice, Neptune goes around three times. So
mm-hmm.
anything that maintains that relationship, roughly 250 years in orbit, is going to be an underworld deity and will represent the need to descend into the underworld in order to get it. Anything beyond that in orbit is considered to be transformational and the other side of it. You know, like a lot of people, it used to be when we only knew about Pluto, you know, people would walk around at astrological venues and whatnot and talk about how proud of themselves they were because they had, you know, done this Pluto thing. And
right.
I'm like, well, good for you, but so what? The fact that you're talking about it and saying, look how great I am because I've transformed, means that you haven't gotten it. Do something with it. So now all of these planets that have orbits longer than Pluto, of which there are now many, they represent what you do after transformation. And Eris
right.
is one of those bodies. Eris is one of those bodies that says, we don't care if you've transformed. Do something about it. Do something with it. Make a contribution. And so all of these planets are asking, you know, they're asking people to look inside and say, what is it that you've got to work with? What do you have to give?
Yeah, so Eris basically is saying, walk it, don't just talk it.
Eris is saying, get over it. You know, the stuff that you have doesn't mean anything. And if you thought that you were really rich last July, you probably don't feel as rich right now. So what
right.
does that mean in terms of your shrinking psyche? How do you fortify yourself? How do you stay intact? You know, again, it goes back to who the hell are you? And that's the question that Eris is asking. And now that you know, what you do is you create your own niche in life. You go out there and you say, this is where I belong. So part of it is about finding a sense of proper belonging. Whoever it was, I can't remember who it was, who said, you know, I wouldn't belong to a club that had me. That's an Eris phenomena. It's like,
right.
you know, it's like, what's wrong with you? It's like, I don't fit in this particular mold. So Eris is saying break the mold, but that's not
mm-hmm.
all. We've got more help out there. We have two other planets that fall into this same category. And planets, I use the word planet, though I am referring to a dwarf planet, because I still perceive them as planets because I know that they're rock solid in their consciousness. They're not like Jupiter, which is, you know, really, it's a lot of gas.
Right.
You know, how big would that planet be if it were solid? Not as large as it is and such. So we have two others here that are trying to shift consciousness. And can I go on?
Please.
Okay. One of them is called McKay, or some people are going to call it Mucky. And this was discovered in 2005. And this one has the agenda of self-proclamation. And when I say self-proclamation, this is like where you really let people know what you've got to offer. And that means in terms of fertility, and that means in terms of creativity. There's a tremendous creative spirit to McKay. And there is also the urge with this to to propagate a healthy level of survival. Now, the other thing that happens with this body is it can also be propaganda. It can also be nonsense. And some people that have this in, shall we say, as we like to say, a less than ideal or afflicted sense, all they do is they spin the hype. And step back to Pluto being in Sagittarius for a minute, you know, some people said, oh, it'll be the death of religion. No, it wasn't the death of religion. And as my colleague Jeff Jauer pointed out in a lecture last year, it was the death of truth. And as Pluto went over the galactic center, we got clear on how much we'd been lied to.
Most definitely.
Along the way. And it's like, you know what? You've been fed such a big ration, and you ate it willingly. What a fool you are. And so now it's like, okay, let's get through that. Let's disband the lies and the propaganda. And McKay is saying, you know, let's work with this. Now, McKay comes from Easter Island, and he was a birdman goddess from that island, and the birdman represents a cross-cultural reference and also a cross-species reference, which in shamanic traditions is incredibly important. And given that survival in Easter Island was so, it was so critical all the time, I mean, they're separated from the mainland by 1,000 miles or so, and it's a small island, and you got birds and fish, and you know, not that much room to grow crops and things. So food supplies are issues of McKay, and the balance of the population to the ability of the land and planet to sustain it are part of the message of this. So there's a greenhouse ecological movement that comes out of this, and later this year we're going to have Saturn with McKay. And this is going to be the, it's going to be an anti-Palin, anti-Suleiman kind of concept. It's like, you know, you just can't breed at will. That is not a way of creating a legacy that doesn't do anything for your spirituality per se. And you know what? The planet's in trouble. And so one of the resource consciousness elements will be in September, as Saturn comes to this planet, that the population, issues are going to be are going to start looming. It's like, well, what do we do about the population? I mean, we can't just let people, you know, go to fertility clinics and have 8 babies when they've already got 6. We can't do that.
And right.
So what are we going to do about that? I mean, are we going to have to do something quasi-Chinese and say, well, you know, I don't know, maybe we need parent licenses or, you know, how do we deal with this? I mean, we don't need to propagate the species right now. And this is going to be one of the agendas that comes with that. And on a personal level, the message of McKay is, you know, what is your personal spiritual contribution and how are you going to invoke it? There's a movie that's really obscure called Rapa Nui, and it actually addresses the ceremony that goes with McKay, which was, as spring came around, there was a big hunt by the men to go find the first egg, and they had to climb the cliffs above the seas, very precarious cliffs. And once they found the first egg, they were the winner of this contest. And the reward was to have your hair shaved off and then go into a cave for a year and figure it out. And then you get to come out and, you know, as part of your reward and go ahead and say to the clan what you learned in your cave experience. And it's like, wow. So if you win, you get to go in, you're assigned a place in the consciousness of the underworld, and then you come back and tell everybody about it. Wow. And so when people disappear for a year, as it were, or decide to take a break or time off, they're doing a McKay sort of emphasis.
Excellent.
So
that,
huh?
That sounds like fun. I go into hermit mode is what I call quite often.
It is, and it doesn't. I don't know that it necessarily has to be a year, but that was, you know, that was the prescription on Easter Island, Rapa Nui.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is worth tracking down. I mean, you can get it on the internet, and you know, it died because everybody went whatever. It came out in 1994. Kevin Costner directed, and you know, a lot of people in it whose name you would know. Sandrine Holt, if you watch The L Word, you'd know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just went nowhere because people were like, whatever. I mean, we were still more than a decade away from discovering the planet to which it was attached. But somebody had the vision along there to go ahead and to start getting this into the consciousness.
Now, what was the name of that movie? One more time so people can track it down.
Rapa Nui. Rapa Nui. R-A-P-A-N-U-I, as in the name of Easter Island. I mean, it was called Easter Island because the people that came there and caused all kinds of problems to the explorers called it Easter Island because they got there on Easter. That's how that happened. And interestingly, astronomers, you know, they have names for things like McKay. McKay was 2000 Y FY9. That's a little hard to work into a conversation. So they gave it a nickname. Mm-hmm. And a nickname for McKay McKay was Easter Bunny. For Eris, they used Xena, as in the goddess Xena. And everybody thought there was a whole web culture that started saying, Xena, you know, that's the archetype. It's like, no, that's not the archetype. That's a nickname. Wait till they actually name it. But the Xena thing took off, and so did the Lila Lilith because of a misread in Internet communication and so on. The other one that we have out there is it was named September, maybe it was August, I don't remember the exact date. I know it was up at Lowell Observatory when it was named, and it's Haumea, Haumea, and there's some really nice mythic stories about this that you can have if you go ahead and do a Google on it. She was a Hawaiian creation deity who cast off parts of her body to create other deity, for instance, Pele and, you know, the other potent Hawaiian deity. She issued warnings to mariners and things along that line. But what's most compelling about her is she has the shortest day of anybody in the solar system. 3.9 hours is her day. So it's really, really short. It appears that a long time ago she was hit by another object, and she was once, like most of the bodies out there, a collection of ice and rock. Well, all the ice got knocked off, and then a thin layer of ice reformed on the body, and she now travels with two moons and seven bodies in her orbit of ice that used to be part of her. And she represents the pack mentality that's so popular right now, the entourage syndrome, like the show Entourage, like a lot of younger folks right now, they travel in packs. That's what they do, you know. I don't know if it's necessarily a safety in numbers thing or if they just like their companions. Astrologically, there are other factors that kind of contribute to this too, but there's like this group mentality that's very large. But most importantly, what this body says is it's time to make an assessment of the people with whom you hang. And this is kind of a carry-on with Eris. You know, you want so much to be involved with a group, so you get involved, but then you have to assess, does this fit with your energy? Does this impede you in any way? Does it retard you? Does it slow you down? Does it cause negative dependencies that you cannot sustain and support? So Haumea is sort of like a culling of people that are not part of your specific spiritual purpose. This is not to say that you shun people outside of that, but it's to say that you build a very clear inner circle and where you have a kindred spirit mentality. And other people are, you know, one step removed from that. And the core group of your spiritual clan, as it were, can feed out to those others and share whatever it is that they would be willing to accept. And part of overcoming the recent trend of Pluto and Sagittarius, it's a matter of not being force-fed anymore. It's a matter of not having it jammed down your throat. It's a matter of, yes, this is something that I can accept, and I would like to chew on that for a while. So she comes in with this level of consciousness also, and she is extremely self-affirming. You know, the astrologers talk about, you know, there's a different Pluto generation that's going to be, well, depending upon where Pluto is in his orbit, it's going to be more than a decade and sometimes a long, long time, like up to 20 years and sometimes, you know, just over 10 years, 12 years, when it's in Scorpio, for instance. But the different Pluto generations have different attitudes. The Pluto and Leo generation that I'm part of, you know, the Pluto and Virgo generation refers to us as egomaniacal. And all you guys do is think about yourself. And it's like, well, all you do is think about technology and stuff. And then the Pluto and Libra is all you do is think about other people. So all of these generations have their own attitude. But this one comes in and said, regardless of what that collective attitude happens to be, go ahead and make sure that you maintain your level of self-referential spirit. And that's part of the theme that's coming back. Return to yourself. and build that collective strength within prior to going out and trying to influence the masses, as it were.
Which is almost like a repeating theme of the awareness and consciousness, because you got to know yourself before you really can participate in a community or in humanity to really do any good.
Exactly, exactly. And there needs to be there, you know, the care of the being is above and beyond, you know, in terms of importance. You know, it's unfortunate that in this time of economic hardship, you know, you read things like McDonald's is being, you know, more patronized and. Yeah, because people need cheaper food, but there are other inexpensive food options that have a higher level of quality, and it requires a consciousness shift to go ahead and to get that $1.50 or more at lunch is worth it in terms of your body's well-being, because, you know, that's the temple. You're going to feel better when you go back and do whatever it is that you're doing after lunch, and so on. So it's really a matter of shifting priorities and getting out of there's been a lot of don't think of yourself communicated over the last years, both theologically and also as part of the political mindset. So that the core of being is coming back. There is another factor out there too. There's a really unusual body named Sedna that came mm-hmm. to our awareness in 2003. It's a hard story. If you really want to see this in play, there are two movies that are the Sedna mythology, both quite good. One is Whale Rider, and the other one is Tim Burton's Corpse Bride. is more of a personalized issue. The Whale Rider is more of the tribal consciousness, as in what will you do for humanity, and
right.
Corpse Bride is more like what's your personal issue. If you Google the myth on Sedna, you sit there and go, ew, I definitely don't want this one included in my chart. No, no, no. It's a tough story to integrate. It has many, many problems between father and daughter. And yet, the myth goes back to the conscious choices one makes. And simply, there are two levels of conscious choice that Sedna is proclaiming that everyone make. One is, choose your physical necessities first. You must take care of your being first. You must take care of your domestic environment, your body. That's number one. And then number two is make choices that are good for your spirit. Basically, Sedna, her father was trying to marry her off, and there's a question to be asked there. Why was he so aggressive in getting her out of the igloo? Because she lives an Arctic goddess, part of the Inuit culture. And she rejected all suitors until a bird man who was a shapeshifter came over in disguise, pretended to be a guy, great big kayak, nice and shiny and stuff, and said, baby, oh baby, I can feed you, I can love you, I can get you servants, you will be well clothed. And without even thinking, she stepped onto his kayak and went away. And it turned out to be a fiasco. And it's like, what happened there? I mean, here she'd been discerning and critical of any potential suitor. And then this guy, she just stepped on his kayak because he had a good rap and looked good. What was up with that? And the joke that goes with that is never go out with anyone you haven't Googled. The choice selection process. Well, it's sadly that's true. Because especially if you meet somebody on the internet, they're whoever they write they are. They're like the birdman coming in and saying, oh, I'm this, I'm that, and it's like, oh, ooh. You must have ice cream exude from your pores. And it's easy to be swept away by that kind of stuff. And Sedna brings in the reality check, you know, make good choices, conscious choices. And what's happening for the boomers, as in those people born in 1946 and 1947, they are having the position where this body Sedna was when they were born is now being transited by the planet Eris. And what's happening is the people born between 45 and 47, as in 19, they come in for readings. There's nothing wrong with their life, and yet they have this tremendous sense of unease because they've made all of these choices, and they've done the right thing. They've included themselves in society properly, and they're not happy. So now they have to make a second choice. And, you know, I mean, you can see the themes playing out, and all of them are leading back to, you know, make good choices that represent who you are. All of them are feeding to that. You know, think for yourself is another part of it. You know, stop being told things. Just because somebody blogged it doesn't make it true. my God, we learned in the last 8 years that the stuff that the White House tells you probably may not be true. The Catholics tell you that the sun is not the center of the solar system. And they tell you that matter is not made up of atoms. Who are you going to believe? You know, it's all coming back to that level of getting into the core instinct. And this is where it's huge. And as far as astrologers go, it's really important to include these archetypes. And there are many other things that can be included that have been recently discovered. Without them, you know, we're still using the same limited tool set, where there are new tools that are kind of more specialized to the issues and social maladies that we have that's resulted from the way that we've been living our lives.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of other goddesses that can be a part of your chart that can make a difference, like Juno and Gazesta, and there's a few others out there that most people don't even really look at when they get their chart done, yet they can impact you.
That is true. And the other thing is, since you brought up Juno and Vesta, there's another goddess who had a bit of a temper, especially when her daughter was abducted by Lord Pluto and taken into the underworld. Boy, was she livid. I think we'd say pissed today. But Ceres, and Ceres is now a planet. And when you look at the physical characteristics of the density and gravity, as I was mentioning before, Ceres is off the chart relative to every other body in the solar system that we consider to be planetary. She exceeds, which I think is why she was given so much deference by the gods. They knew that when Ceres was mad, you didn't do anything else to agitate her, and you did everything you could to pacify her. And that's what was done mythologically. And Ceres goes back to, Ceres can represent defense of the underdog, and Ceres is also protection of those who don't know that they need protection. To some degree, you have to be really careful there because there can be interference and meddlesomeness in that. It's like, well, you don't know any better, so that's why I'm going to pray for you. The Mormons will pray for people, you know, once they find your name and put you into the eternal book or whatever they call it, and they're doing you a favor because you don't know any better. Then there are those who, you know, like the person who comes down the street and says, no, don't play the shell game with that carnival-like guy on the street corner. You're going to lose all your money. That kind of thing. Those are all Ceres archetypes. And there are more. And there's, as the Internet was surging in the early 1990s and really hitting stride in 93, 94, and really going, well, I don't remember the exact year that Al Gore discovered it. But at that same time, we were discovering these bodies called centaurs out in space, of which Chiron is one. And most astrologers will use Chiron, but they ignore the rest of them. And again, if you go into the size matters mentality, Chiron's wife, Kariklo, is even larger than Chiron. So maybe she should be included. But what the centaurs bring to the table is they were sensualist. Sensualist in the sense that they included every sense in everything they did every day in every moment. Their sense of smell was the strongest. And a lot of what they did was based upon smell. So here we have, get in touch with your senses at the time that there's internet electronic explosion, when the people with whom you are communicating, you can't get any sense of vibes. And we're becoming more disconnected and more out of body because of the electronic stimulation. The centaur started showing up at this time saying, stay in your body. In fact, you might want to add two more legs and increase your number of chakras just so you don't drift off the planet when you're so, you know, blown out by what's in computer land.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like there's a cosmic system of checks and balances. The further our discoveries go, the more assistance we get in terms of consciousness and the metaphors of consciousness through the archetypes, so that we can cope with the rapid progress that we're making. And to kind of go back to the original point that you brought up with the galactic center, one of my terms for the galactic center is there's a thing called psychotechnological adjustment. Which is, it's just a word that one day I wanted to sound smart, and so I made it up. But what it basically means is, how can your psyche adjust to this? I mean, do you know that you don't even have to have sex to make babies anymore? I mean, what does that do to you? I mean, you know, look what we can do with other forms of DNA extraction and whatnot. I mean, isn't that mind-boggling? Isn't it mind-boggling that we can do the things that we can do electronically, where you can type on a little thing and somebody gets it instantaneously? I mean, if you really think about this, And it's going back to how well do we adjust to these ideas?
Right.
Can we integrate them? And so we're getting all of the help. I mean, we're not, from the astrological point of view with the discoveries and whatnot, as they like to say in the spiritual circles, well, you're never tested beyond your ability. Of course, in one of those days when you're hurting, you just as soon kick that person who delivers that message into deep. You know, like, I'm not interested in hearing that right now. I'm feeling overwhelmed, thank you. But the truth of the matter is, if these archetypes are used, we have solutions. We have more solutions than people are considering because they're resistant to expanding into. I do not understand. I absolutely cannot understand how astrologers are ignoring Eris and the other planets, and most of them are. I mean, I do lectures at conferences on these things. Other astrologers will pack the room with 200 people, and I'll maybe have 15 when I'm doing this kind of thing. And I just sit there and go, what is wrong here? I mean, don't you understand this is the next wave? You know, why are you going to the popular one?
Well, think about it. You just got one of those, you know, galactic center ideas, and you're just ahead of your time.
Well, there is that. I do feel a bit like Cassandra on most days, except for Tuesdays. I take Tuesday off from feeling like Cassandra. But it is that, and it does take people time to, you know, to grow into it. I wonder how Da Vinci felt. You know, it's like, but look, we could fly. No, go away.
Yeah, I mean, he really was quite ahead of his time. He must have had a really strong connection with the Galactic Center.
I don't actually know that would be worth looking at.
Yeah, because he was quite the inventor, the artist, so he had a creative edge as well, the writer. I mean, he did it all, and way before his time.
Indeed, and yet anyone who decides to go ahead and to take on these archetypes is going to be way ahead of their time, and they can be the leader of the pack, as it were. Not that that's the goal, but what is the goal is that you know, that a person actually start using all of the available consciousness and say, yeah, I'm in. This is good stuff. And going from there. I mean, you know, people that we can look at that in the past that have had, you know, like the strong McKay connections, which is, you know, like understanding your species and whatnot. Thomas Edison had that very strong in his chart. He had it. He had it with Mercury, and Obama has it. And they're delivering these messages of, okay, it's time to change. Edison said, we don't have to use candles anymore. We can actually change over to electricity. How would that be? I've got this thing called a light bulb, and you're going to really get used to it. You're going to like it. Wouldn't you try it?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are these archetypes out there. And yet, another example of McKay that I just want to put into the mix, you know, with any of these things, you know, what we have is we have the ability to go ahead and to use it favorably, and we have the ability to use it not quite so favorably. And when it's used not so favorably, then, you know, it's a bit more of a tragedy in that sense. Now, when we look at, you know, the ability to spin propaganda and create facts and whatnot, George Bush had McKay conjunct his son.
That's interesting.
It is interesting because it's like this is the way that it is. And, you know, the whole mindset of if you're not with us, you're against us kind of spun out of that as well. And it's like, wow. Wow, how interesting is that?
Mm-hmm. I immediately think of Hitler, because talk about propaganda. Huge amount.
I haven't actually looked at his, because every time somebody uses, you know, says Hitler, you end up on, you know, some sort of worst person page for invoking the imagery. But there is something to learn from, you know, people that have used it well and people that have not. Edwin Hubble had McKay prominent. He's the guy that started developing galaxy mm-hmm. consciousness, for whom the Hubble telescope that gives us all those groovy free pictures online.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, our time is almost up, so I want to make sure so people know that you're out and about.
I am out and about.
So what are some of the things that are coming up for you in the next couple months?
Well, if people want to catch up with me live and in person, there's two things I'm doing. A local event here in Tucson coming up a week, well, on the 13th and 14th of March. And then in May, starting the
20th through the 25th, if you're talking about Seattle.
Okay, yes, up in Seattle, the NORWAC conference, which is an amazing conference astrologically. It's a great group of people, and I will be there. I've been there for years on end. It's kind of like going to a family reunion going up there, and the information is sensational, and the learning environment is fertile because, you know, people eat together twice a day, and, you know, that's when a lot of good talking gets done. And so I will be available for that. And I do want to amend one thing that you said at the beginning. My website is philipsedgwick.com, not Phil Sedgwick. So it's Philip with one L. That's all right. Philip with one L, and then Sedgwick, S-E-D-G-W-I-C-K. And there's a weekly newsletter that I do called the Galactic Times, and I talk about these trends and put it out there. It's like, here, think about this. And, you know, trying to stay upbeat and, you know, trying to get people to stop saying, oh, the economy's going to be bad for the next millennium. It's like, shut up. You know, it's like, it's going to be difficult for a while, but what if we start infusing it again and start thinking differently and invest our creativity and, you know, so people could sign up for those little messages and whatnot. And there's a free oracle on the website, and we know who you are when you click the oracle more than 10 times in a row. It sends a warning to us. It's like, this person will not get the right answer. I'm kidding, but it happens. I've seen people do oracles online where they keep clicking and clicking until it says what they want. But there is an oracle on there that's based on galactic effects and some other fun things.
I mean, you've got tons of stuff, and you do. If somebody wants to get a consultation with you, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
Email is the best way. I mean, you know, I'll answer the phone sometimes, but a lot of times I won't. If I'm working on something or writing it, and I look at it and I don't recognize the names, like, oh, I'll just take the message. But email, I'm pretty good at responding to them and try to get people a session in the near future so that they don't have to sit around and, you know, I don't understand how astrologers, you know, book, well, I don't have an appointment for 6 months. It's like, well, damn, you might as well be a doctor then.
Yeah.
You're doing me as little good as they do. So, you know, I keep it a little closer in, so you'll be able to get a session soon. And I do have some shorter time options, and also people can ask questions by email and get email answers to questions if they don't want or can't afford a full consultation. That's, you know, an effort at economic sanity. And I also have a price break for people who have been laid off, not fired or not quit, but laid off as a result of, you know, the economic downswing and veterans. Being a veteran myself, you know, I know that these people who are coming back are having a really hard time, harder than people realize. So there are discounts for those subgroups of culture too.
And what is that email, Philip?
My email is you can use galactic@philipsedgwick.com. There are several emails in there, but they all end up coming to the same place. It just, you know, makes me look bigger than I am. I'm trying to look like a corporation, so I have 4 email addresses on this. I could have 100, but, so.
Well, it just says how much information you have stored in that brain of yours that is immense, and your brilliance shows through.
Well, thank you. And there's tons of archives on the website also that include things I've written going back to when I started doing the website and even before, and there's a lot of content there. So if a person wants to prowl around, they'll find a lot of stuff. There's an article on the Galactic Center and, you know, other galactic points and more. So it's there, and, you know, most of the stuff on the site you can access information for free, which is, you know, the price is right now. But there are, of course, other options. I have a CD that if an astrologer wants to study, you know, these galactic things, it's possible. And, oh, by the way, you get free updates every time there's a new planet discovery. You'll be one of the first kids to have the new information. And that
That's
just goes on. That just goes on forever. Well, as long as I'm still doing this stuff.
Now, you also, real quickly, you also write screenplays, and you're in the midst of doing a reality show?
Well, we've been working with several actually, and they go through various phases of yes and no, and they're a little cold right now. But I'm working with a couple of scripts right now, and there's a lot of potential out there. And the idea is take stories out there. You know what? People really want to be entertained into enlightenment. And the majority of the population wants that. And as I learned last year when I was writing for the Huffington Post, the majority of the people in this country hate astrology. About 80% are against it. And so, you know, if you've got something good to say, take the mythic message and put it out there in some way that people can wrap around and go, oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, and sense of humor also helps, which you have a wonderful sense of humor.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's something that I don't know if that's a gene or what it is, or cultivation by my mother. But regardless, I try to put a little tongue-in-cheek in there because it gets a little stodgy and a little serious out there every now and then.
Just a little?
Okay, I was understating. And you caught me.
Well, that's what I do for a living.
Well, there you go.
I do what I'm supposed to do.
There you go.
Philip Sedgwick, I do want to thank you very much for being on the show today, tonight. And it will be this weekend because the show is on March 12th, so this next weekend you will be in Tucson at the Astrology Guild and giving a wonderful talk on... You've got a couple things you're talking about. You've got one on light bulbs and brainstorms, Jupiter in Aquarius, and then make and more. Oh,
yeah.
So you've got lots of good things going on coming up in the next couple months, and I do thank you very much.
Absolutely,
and
my pleasure.
And it is Philip. Sedgwick.com. If you want to get in touch with all this wonderful information, I do highly recommend you go on the website. There's tons of information for you, and it is definitely a learning experience for all that venture into the great planets that we don't really look about too much, but it is becoming more popular. I know it's going to be on the forefront. So, I thank you very much. And with this, I am Jennifer Hellman saying with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspiration. Thank you very much and good night.